This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and on this episode, I'm taking you to the Southeastern Theater Conference Convention. For those of you unfamiliar with the Southeastern Theater Conference, also known as SETC, this organization serves about 5,000 members, including 479 theaters, educational institutions, and arts organizations throughout the Southeastern United States. I am broadcasting from the Southeastern Theater Conference's annual convention in Louisville, Kentucky, from the Kentucky International Convention Center with some highlights.
Hi, I'm David Grindel. I'm the executive director at USITT, which is the United States Institute for Theater Technology. We're a 60-year-old organization this year. We were founded to provide opportunities for education, training, and research in theater and entertainment design and technology, architecture and engineering. So we provide everything from a journal that deals with teaching and research in scenery, costume lighting, projection design, sound design, and management often, all the way up through classes for rigging. And we have a class that was designed for the high school teacher that finds themselves now responsible for the theater, for they never intended to be a theater person. So we try to find a way to help them learn how to effectively work in their theater and work in there safely. In addition, we do online classes, in-person classes, hands-on training. I love the fact that we can teach really modern technique and also still embrace 17th century painting. Realizing that our industry often embraces really new things wrapped up in really old traditional methods.
So what makes good design?
Wow, what makes good design?
No pressure, 30 seconds or less.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
No pressure. Whatever you say, you're going to irritate some portion of your membership. To me, good design is made up of being able to help tell the story. You know, when we do live theater or live performance of any kind, not just necessarily traditional theater, the environment in which we do it really helps tell the story. And so an effective good design is one that helps the audience embrace the story that's being told and allows them to get to the message that we're all trying to share. As a collaborative art, it's wonderful to be able to appreciate beautiful design. But I really believe that the greatest designs are really the ones that when people walk away, they feel like they've been part of a story and can reflect on it or embrace it or maybe even be disturbed by it because it made them realize something about life. And the designer is part of that, visually, aurally, often, sometimes even down to sensorially, when the way we create an environment for people to walk in.
So what's next, or what is on the cutting edge of theater design? You were talking about virtual reality and how directors can use that technology.
So there are some things. There are some marvelous ways to use virtual reality, combining multiple softwares so that a director can walk through a set in the design process and get a better feel for how it might interact. To me, what are really on the cutting edge is the use and reuse of material. As we work to look at the overall environmental impact of theater, it's often fascinating that we return back to some of our older traditions of use and reuse and identifying materials that are able to be reused. When we had Danielle Worley's production of Peter and the Star Catcher on Broadway, Danielle's a really fabulous, environmentally conscious designer, so she wanted everything to be a found object, if at all possible, to the point that she doesn't even throw away cereal boxes. Her models are painted on the inside covers of cereal boxes to use and reuse and make sure that people understand that what we do really does leave a footprint. And so I think that's some of that awareness is what's leading us in new directions in many ways.
I love that.
I'm Molly Braverman, and I am the director of the Broadway Green Alliance. We are a theater organization and a sustainability organization. We work right at that intersection because there's so much that we can do as theater artists using our tools and our skill sets to help shine a spotlight on environmental organizations and promote environmental practice in our patrons, in our fans, in addition to making sure that our own theater practices are more environmentally friendly. And we can do that through a multitude of ways by looking again at our own work, at our own materials, what would we use? Are we using Luan or are we using sustainably sourced wood? How are we disposing of our sets and our props and our costumes at the end of a process? There's so many ways to do things throughout the process, in addition to, again, looking at the way we're using our voices as artists to inspire others, to build community and build resilience in the face of the climate crisis.
And how did you start this? How did you get into this? Were you a theater maker who saw a problem and created an organization to create a solution?
Sure. The Broadway Green Alliance was formed back in 2008 when a town hall was called at the Gershwin Theater at Wicked because lots of theater makers and activists were doing work all around Broadway, and a town hall was called to bring them all together so that people could see what others were doing and begin to work together and share ideas. And that's what the BGA is really there for, is to shine a spotlight on everyone's work so that people could learn from each other all throughout the country in all different theaters and begin to adopt those practices together.
And I heard you talking about a college program. We have a lot of colleges in Raleigh-Durham. What can they do at the college level to get involved?
That's great. We have a Green Captain program for colleges and universities. So on Broadway, we have Green Captains in every Broadway show. In fact, I was a Green Captain when I was a stage manager on Wicked. That's how I first got involved. And so just like on those Broadway shows, college students can become Green Captains at their own universities, and that's all it takes is for them to volunteer and say that they want to be the Green Advocate for their college theater program, and they can reach out to us at broadwaygreen.com for more information, and we'll send them a Green Captain kit to get started.
My name is Danielle Rasmussen. I'm the Director of Education and Community Engagement at the Cincinnati Playhouse in the Park. As part of my responsibilities, I cast, recruit, and manage our acting intern program. I hire 7 actors every year, and they are with us for 10 to 11 months. And in that time, we keep them really, really busy as we're helping them transition from academic theater into professional theater and helping them adjust and create a strategic plan for what it means for them to be a working actor.
And what is, I love that you're talking about that transition from academia to the real world, real life. So what are the biggest struggles that young actors face making that transition?
The largest struggle is what academic theater is versus what professional theater is. Academic theater is a safe haven where you are there to be developed. Your professors and directors are teaching you, and they are invested in your professional, personal, and artistic development. When you transition into professional theater, it is a job, and nobody cares about your artistic fulfillment. You either do the job or you don't do the job, and we can fill it with someone else. Not in a cold-blooded way, but in like a job way. You go work for Starbucks, they don't care about your artistic or personal fulfillment. It's a job. And the hardest thing for young actors is transitioning into what it means to be a working actor, where you take the contract whether or not you feel fulfilled by the role or not, because you need your health and your pension weeks. So you might be tree number four, and then guess what? You're sitting around a long time because they're paying for your time and they want you there for when they do need you, but you're not feeling fulfilled or feeling like your time is being wasted, except your time is being paid for. So it's a very big change in mindset. The other thing is, what you're expected to come into the room prepared to do in a professional environment versus in an academic environment. When you're doing a show in a school or in an academic setting, it is a teaching lab. You are learning how to create character. You are learning how to develop all your choices in the room, and your director is teaching you while they're directing you. When you go into a professional environment, you have to come in with your homework done. You have to come in with your choices made and a fully formed character that you were putting out there. And then every director is different. Some directors do want to help you find choices. And then there are other directors who want you to do your work, and then they're going to whittle you down to fit with the other characters. That is the biggest difference. And then in addition to that is understanding the stamina that is required of you when you're a working actor, because theater, being a working actor, isn't a job, it's a lot of jobs. And it's survival jobs in between your theater gigs. And when you're in rehearsal for one show, you're still auditioning, and you have your survival job, and you're probably performing at night. So success, when you're a working actor, is that you are constantly working and hustling. And that's the other transition that's really difficult, is you don't get to pick what time your schedule is, like you do with college classes. You don't get to have a lot of time off, because one gig might be off contract, but the other one isn't off contract, and you can't afford to not be on that contract right now, and there's no time off. So what success looks like is so different, and the stamina that's required of you is so different than when you're in school.
So what makes a good audition? There are hundreds of people here auditioning, yes, and really focused on that audition, the monologue, getting it right. And for everybody, getting it right means something different. So yes, from the producer aspect, from the theater aspect, what makes a good audition? What are you looking for?
Well, when we're looking at an audition, I'm looking for several things. One, do you know who you are as an actor? Two, can you make choices? So when you pick a narrative monologue versus an active monologue, so a narrative monologue is telling me a story about something that happened, versus an active monologue, which is trying to convince someone of something or get something from them. The active monologues are the ones where we actually get to see choices being made. You're playing stakes, you're playing for an objective, and you are having to change your tactics when you don't get what you want. In a narrative monologue, sometimes we get really good moment to moment and we get good characterizations, but I can't actually tell if you can make choices. The other thing that makes a really good audition is being honest, grounded, and authentic. When you overproduce the audition piece, it comes off really over the top. When you're truthful, it's always going to play well. You have to be truthful, you have to play your actions, and you have to be pursuing something. So that I know, what I'm looking at in an audition is, how do you do your work? What are you bringing into a room? Because an audition isn't a directed piece. You might have a coach, but it's still coming from you. That's literally you doing your work. So what I'm looking for is, how do you do your work? How prepared are you when you come into a room? And do you understand what you're saying? Are you grounded into your stakes? The other thing I'm looking at is your package and your polish. Are you confident? Are you comfortable in your own skin? Do you know how to dress? And what I mean by that is, it's not that people don't look good, but I think that there's a lot of women who come in short skirts and high heels, and it impedes their movement. So I'm looking for you to make physical choices as much as I'm looking for you to make emotional choices. And when your clothes impede you, or you start to do movement not thinking about the fact that you're wearing a short skirt that you shouldn't be doing that movement in, now I'm thinking about the fact that I'm worried about being flashed versus focusing on your audition. The other thing that's important to know is just to come in very, very prepared. Do your audition piece for lots of different people so that when your nerves kick in, it doesn't throw you off, because we can see your nervousness and we can smell your nervousness throughout the room. But that can be fixed by preparation. You have to think about an audition like an interview. This is your job interview. So when you go into Starbucks, you find the interview questions online, and you have your materials ready, and you dress for an interview. An audition is an interview. this is how we know how you would do that job. So if you approach it clinically like that, then it's not an emotional thing. The other thing I think that's really important that makes a successful audition is to walk in understanding what's about to happen. And what I mean by that is your talent is not on the line. The question of your talent and your ability is not a question. We want you to be who we need to, we want you to be who we're looking for. We're there for very specific reasons. Casting is 90% logistics. If you are not who I'm looking for because of what I'm casting specifically for in my season, it has nothing to do with your talent. Mm. And when you take that pressure off of your shoulders and you think about it as, this audition is my opportunity to perform today, then you can have joy. You need to have joy in the work that you're doing, because then we see your joy. Mm. And that will permeate. If you walk in, throw down, do your best, everything that you could do to prepare to have a solid audition, you did that and you don't get a callback or you don't get anything from that, then it's not about you, it's about the logistics. There are hundreds of young women in that room that I saw in the last few days that I can't even consider because I don't have a track for them. Does not mean they're not wonderful. Does not mean that they did not work hard or have talent. And I actually hate the word talent. I think their talent makes it seem like it's effortless and you don't have to put any work in, when in fact it's about craft and ability and honing it and hustling. And when you do those things and things don't align, it's not really about you. It's about, what are the requirements of my season? What is the requirements of the diversity of the company that I'm casting for? And then sometimes you'll fit that for someone and sometimes you won't. But if you can walk in and just enjoy the fact that the 75 people are trapped in that room and you get to perform for them today, and hallelujah for that, because that's what we live for, treat it like a show, treat it like a performance, and enjoy the fact that you are live and you get to perform today, and the rest will take care of itself.
Hi, I'm Kyla Kazacek. For SCTC, I'm the chair of the Cultural Diversity Committee, and I'm from Louisiana. I teach at Louisiana State University.
To me, cultural diversity and this whole discussion of equity, diversity, inclusion is kind of the undercurrent of this whole theater conversation right now.
Undercurrent is a good way to say it, that it reaches out into everything. And that's actually why it's kind of confusing that we exist as a committee. It's historically been the Cultural Diversity Committee, and it's kind of functioned as an international committee, like bringing things from other cultures to SCTC. But as the values of SCTC shift and are defined more towards, hello, equity, diversity, and inclusion, that the cultural diversity is encompassing of that more and more, and figuring out ways that, like you said, representation matters so much for people to see themselves on stage and to see their own stories on stage and to feel like their voices are heard. Like, that's the magic and the power of theater.
My name is Cody Clark. I'm a magician and autistic self-advocate.
There was a time I can remember being like the only autistic representation in any form of media beyond Rain Man. Now we have two main network or streaming TV shows with autistic characters, and now there's at least one other fringe act who's a singer who does a show about autism. It's still nowhere near where it needs to be, but even those four or five examples really have changed people's thoughts on autism a lot.
But in most of those examples, you have actors without disabilities playing someone who has a disability. So why is it important for someone like you, who is living with a disability, to represent yourself on stage?
Because we've lived the experience in a way that a neurotypical writer or a neurotypical actor has not. So if we portray a stereotype, it's only because it's true.
I'm here with Ashley Latimer, who is better known in social media circles as Mixed Thief, the social media manager behind the Broadway show The Lightning Thief. In your keynote speech here at the conference, you talked about how the fans and that online community really empowered you after you came out. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, so I came out a few months before I started working on the show. So I came out about 4 days after the 2016 election, and not to get too political, but there were nine reported suicides of trans kids in the days right after that election. And I had been really nervous about coming out because I worked at a children's theater, and that was the main my main community in my hometown. And I'd worked there for 8 years before I moved to the city. That's really where I grew up and became a young adult and then an adultier adult. And, you know, there are lots of stereotypes in media about how teachers in particular are viewed once they come out as part of the LGBT community. So I was nervous that that kind of backlash may exist. And I was really lucky that, and I was honest about that, that that was one of the reasons that I hadn't come out. And I was really lucky that moms and other parents and grandparents like swooped into my comments and they were like, we love you and support you no matter what. But I still felt nervous about owning my identity and also coming out as bi, and that for some reason felt a little bit trickier. And watching, like, knowing that the reason I came out when I did was I was like, I knew I had trans students at the theater, and they, I was like, oh my gosh, like these kids are like 7 and 8 years old. If they can own their truth, then I can, and I want them to know that they have a safe adult in this community no matter what. And so then in turn, watching how vibrant and proud all of the LGBT kids in the Half-Blood fandom and Demigod fandom are, and also how supportive the kids who are cisgender and heterosexual are to their queer friends in the fandom made me want to stand in that vibrancy as well. And it also called me back to, like, the reason I came out in the first place is to be in service of the young people in my network. And I want to be in service to these kids as well.
Hi, my name is Connor Fagan, and I am a stage management apprentice at Actors Theatre. It's just a great time to be an artist with, like, our political time and seeing shows that reflect that and just seeing all of these different works. And it's just a great time to be an artist right now.
It's a moment, right?
It's a moment.
The Southeastern Theatre Conference hosts a variety of events and auditions throughout the year. Next year's annual convention will be in Memphis, and I'll put a link to the SETC website as well as additional resources in the episode notes. On a personal note, Indie Week is accepting nominations for its Best of the Triangle contest, and once again, RDU on Stage is nominated for Best Local Podcast, in addition to Best Local Interest Website and Blog. In order for us to make the cut and be included on the short list of nominees, we really need your support. So click on the Indie Week link in the episode notes and cast your vote. It only takes a minute, but honestly, this kind of recognition goes such a long way in helping a small business like ours get the word out. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast. Follow us on social media at RDU on Stage, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next week, I'll see you at the theater.